Wake up to the roosters, eat breakfast for a booster. You alive, say hallelujah to the man, the mighty ruler. Because of him, you able to do it. If you on his side, then you ain't losing. He gave clothes, food, and your Uber. He tell mountains, get them moving. It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning. Get up and go to that 9 to 5.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? It's a great morning. It's a great morning. It's a great morning. I'm going to have to get another intro for y'all because y'all probably tired of that same intro. Y'all probably even think that it's a pre-recorded intro, but it's not. I do it the same way every single time. In fact, there's this little meme. Well, it's not really a meme. It's a video going around that y'all probably want to watch. This little kid, he enters into the classroom and he's doing this yell thing. It went crazy viral. Even LeBron posted on his IG story yesterday. So the kid just comes in and he's just yelling and he does it the same way every morning he comes into class. So y'all probably think that, like people said about him, that it's pre-recorded, but it's not. That's my intro. I'm gonna try to mix it up the next time. How about that? But listen, let's go ahead and dive into this thing. I hope y'all are having a great Tuesday morning. I personally believe you couldn't be on a better podcast than Great Mornings Podcast. So you here, you might as well listen and share with somebody. We have been the last several weeks talking about what does it mean to be a man. And I've had the likes of Anthony Johnson Jr., Ray Sean Conaway Sr. And last week or a couple weeks ago, I had my little brother Desmond McCormick. And this is week 4 and I'm super excited to introduce this guy. I met him, man, it's probably 2012, maybe. We were at a similar conference supporting one of our brothers who was a son to him in the ministry at the time. Didn't know who he was. I heard great things about him. And fast forward 10, 11 years almost, and my mom called me up one day as I was transitioning from Impact Church of Hazelhurst to come to True Vine Bible Fellowship in California. We were looking for a pastor to hold it down. Had been prophesied that I needed somebody with a similar DNA, not knowing I needed somebody, not just with similar DNA, but with incredible humility. And I had a chance to reconnect to this brother. We call him PG, which stands for Pastor Gibbs, but other people out in the corporate world may know him as Leonard Gibbs. I want to introduce to y'all this brother by way of Liberty City, Miami, Florida, 305, representing Dade County. He's representing for us today, but also by way of Baxley, by way of Hazelhurst, Glenville, Reedsville. He has plenty of places that he's made his mark. He is an absolute preaching machine, very intellectual. I want to introduce to y'all today my brother, if I can call him that, my partner in crime and building the kingdom of God. I call him just Gibbs, but today we're going to call him the bishop, the pastor, the sermonator, Leonard Gibbs. Man, welcome to Great Mornings Podcast. How you feeling, man?
Hey, I'm feeling amazing and rocking steady, Pastor. I am rocking steady. Thank you so much for having me. It's a plum pleasing pleasure to be with you.
Man, no doubt, no doubt. Y'all have probably learned throughout this podcast. If not, this is with all pun intended and a shameless plug. Go back and listen to the sermons on Impact Church of Hazelhurst Facebook page, and you will learn that rocking steady is one of his sayings. In fact, some of the people at the church wore it in a t-shirt. That's what he says. And I don't know if he's never been rocking steady. At least he's never said so. But man, I'm glad to have you on the podcast, man. We appreciate you. Been trying to get you for a week or two, and so glad to have you, man. Just your intellect, your wisdom, your experience in doing what I do as a pastor and preacher. So I'm excited to have you on. We didn't mention to you that Pastor Gibbs is a family man. Ministry has been his heartbeat, but also his heartbeat is his wife now. And he has two new toddler sons. He has two older children, which we're going to talk about. So this brother decided that he would have a 22-year-old and 21-year-old and then say, you know what, Lord, I'm going to start all over. And now he got a 3-year-old, right? 3-year-old toddler.
Yes, sir.
And a 15-month-old toddler. So I want to ask you this question, Pastor Gibbs. How are you navigating fathering small toddlers after raising your kids to be adults? Talk to us about that.
Navigating that terrain is a lot easier the second time around than it was the first time around. By the time I was 22, I was a dad two times over. My oldest son was born when I was 21, and then my daughter was born when I was 22. And unfortunately, I didn't realize it then, but I was trying to discover who I was as a person.
Wow.
And so unfortunately, they got a chance to experience the undiscovered me, the unresolved me, and in many cases, the unhealed me.
Wow.
And those were things I didn't even realize that I was going through, because between 18 and 25, I just believe you just swear you know everything. And you've been around the world twice. You've been around the world once, met everybody twice. And pretty much that's where I was. And I was doing the best way I was doing the best I could. But now my younger kids, they get a chance to experience a person who knows who he is, who has learned from a lot, and who really values moments like this when they're this age, because they're fleeting. Because I looked up one day and my older kids, I was holding them as babies, and the next thing I knew, they were walking across the stage, graduating, and starting their lives and stuff like that. So now I've learned how to really treasure the time with them. And then the good thing about it is I get to glean from my older kids and listen to their experiences and say, okay, I'll check this box. I know what to do and what not to do and what to focus on and what not to focus on.
No, man, that's really good. And I really caught that ending part where one of the advantages is being able to learn from your older kids what to and not do with your younger kids. Let me ask you this. What kind of advice would you give to a man that's now... because with your kids is almost a blended family type of deal, not in a traditional sense where, because your first wife, and I know it's probably a sensitive conversation, but your first wife transitioned, but it's still similar to a blended family. So what is some advice that you would give to men who are entering into blended families? Because I know for me, the way it's going to look when I get married, because I have a daughter, and I'm sure at my age now, it's not even realistic to be thinking of meeting someone that doesn't have children, and who I'm with has children. So what kind of advice would you give to those of us that will have blended families one day? What's some advice you give to a man for a blended family?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is that, number one, accept the reality as it is that you're getting ready to blend multiple cultures.
Wow.
And not just the culture of you as an individual, but there's a culture that you created with the child that you bring to the equation. Then you have to also consider that if the person that the gentleman is dating has children, then they already have a culture that they bring to the table just as a personality by themselves. And then they have a culture that they created with their child. And then once everybody is aware of those cultures, then the two adults would have to come together and determine what is going to be the culture of our family.
Wow.
And another thing that I would recommend is, don't try to erase the past by trying to build the future.
Wow.
Everybody has to come to the table accepting that there was somebody before you.
Wow.
Just like there was somebody before me.
Yeah.
And we don't have to dismiss or erase the past for us to have a good and healthy future.
Man, that's so good. And I hope all our listeners caught that. Don't try to erase the past. Build in the future, right? Man, that's so profound. And you're right. So many of us try with everything in us to erase the past, but you can't erase it. You have to come into the relationship or come into the marriage embracing not only that they had a past, you had a past, but the culture piece that you just talked about. Because the kids have culture, the wife or the husband have culture. In our case, this is man talk. The wife has culture. And now you bring in a culture, and now we got to get to the table and talk about what the culture for our family is going to be. So, man, that's really, really profound. And I wanted some of our men to hear that, and even our sisters to hear that you get to a certain age, man, and you that whole idea of I don't want them to have no kids when I meet them. You know, that idea starts going out the window a little bit, and you got to start really considering what the blended family looks like. And that's such a great response to us. My other question is, because you have three sons now, you have a 22-year-old son and you have a 3-year-old and a 15-month-old son. What is something that you, when we talk about legacy, right? What is something that you want to leave to your sons? Whether that's advice, whether that's tangible, whether it's all of them. But what are some things that you as a man want to leave to your three boys?
One of the first things I want to leave to them is a man who was vulnerable and a man who was vulnerable enough to own his mistakes. Wow. And celebrate his successes, but still own his mistakes.
Wow.
If I could digress just a little bit, and then I'll bring it forward.
For sure.
In a relationship with fathers and sons, it is believed scientifically that children, especially sons with their fathers, go through three types of relationships. Number one, they idolize them.
Wow.
So as a little kid, they idolize the father. And then when they become a teenager and they have an opportunity to see some of the father's mistakes, maybe have heard some things or experienced some things, then for a season they demonize the father.
Wow.
So it's almost like, I can't believe you would do this. And so because coming from idolization to demonization, sometimes the way that they saw them, their humanity can kind of blur that view. And so for a while they go through demonization. But as that son begins to grow and they become a man themselves, then they start to humanize the father. And then they become friends because they begin to realize that, you know what? I made some of the same mistakes and I've been through some things.
Yeah.
So for me, if I could leave friendship with my sons, if I could start out being their father, And then end up being their friends, I think that would be something great. Definitely want to leave for them a legacy of lessons, things that they, when I'm no longer here, that they can lean back on and draw from. And I know over time as they grow, it will mean more than what it is when I'm sharing it with them.
Yeah.
And definitely I want to leave an inheritance. Mm-hmm. One of the things, I'm my father's namesake. And so my middle son, Trey, is my namesake. And one of the things my father did, he built houses and he made a lot of money. These are his words, not mine. He made a lot of money, he said. He said, and unfortunately, he could make money. His challenge was management.
Wow.
And so I was with my dad the day he died. I was with him. We had a great, great, great friendship. He raised me, and he, in the last 4 years of his life, he was terminally ill. And so I was with him the day he died, and he was in the hospital. And so out of the dresser drawer in the hospital by his bed, he told me to get his wallet. In his wallet, there was $100 bill.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, I have made thousands, if not millions, in my life. And all I can leave for my four children is $100. And he already knew I had to split. The day of my father's funeral, I split that $100, gave all of us $25 apiece. And my father said, if you love me, do not leave your children in this same situation.
Wow.
So I want to leave for them an inheritance, because my father said, this brings my religion into question, because he says, the scripture says that you shouldn't trust a man's religion, I'm paraphrasing it, who does not leave an inheritance to his children's children.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that my children are better off than how my father left me.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Man, that's so good, man. And I heard the word vulnerability, friendship, lessons, and inheritance, man. And I think every man that's listening to this, these are four things that you should be evaluating now. Don't wait till you, and I feel this, don't wait till you're on the hospital bed and your kids are visiting you to then try to assess these things. We got life now. We can assess, am I vulnerable with my sons? Am I leaving them with friendship? Are we building that friendship? Are we moving? And then, man, truthfully, I never heard this, but as you mentioned, I thought about every phase of this. I was with my dad. And unfortunately for me, the friendship, and this might sound crazy to some people, the friendship didn't come until after he died. So so now where I am in a state of honoring my dad, I'm honoring him as my boy. This is my dude. But for I was in the period when he died, I was in my early 20s. I was in the period of demonization. When he was young, when I was younger, I idolized him. I see this is good, man, because I wore my first time playing football. I wore number 34 because my daddy wore number 34. So I was idolizing him. And then for years, whatever causes that demonization, right, whether it was him being absent, whatever that we go through that. And now after death, so I appreciate this. I can see the friendship in my dad and the way I honor him. So I want to say to all the brothers out there and to the sisters that are listening, these are some incredible things to think about leaving. Don't just think legacy as in I need to leave them 3 acres or I need to leave them 100,000. But think about the vulnerability and the friendship and the lessons, the legacy lessons. So that's really good. With your boys and with you, how would you tell them or define a man to them? What is a man to Leonard Gibbs? How do you define a man?
Well, for me, I think one of the first things I think that a man has to be is responsible. So one of the first things I think that a man has to be is responsible. He has to be able to accept the fact that what he's given, no matter how he got it, is his.
Wow.
And my daddy used to tell us this story, and I'll just give you the short end of it, because like my father, I have three sons. He had three sons and one daughter. And so I kind of followed in those steps. I have three sons and one daughter. So he spent a whole lot of time. He babied my sister, but he drilled and taught my brothers and I. And so the story that he told us was there was a lady who was old, who was blind but wise. And so a lot of the kids in the neighborhood, they did not believe that you could be smart and blind at the same time. So unfortunately, they went to the lady and they said, "Old woman, we have a bird in our hand. Is the bird dead or alive?" So the old lady says to them, she says, "Whether the bird is dead or alive, I don't know, but it's in your hands." And so the point is that if the bird is dead or alive, your hands.
Yeah.
Teaching my sons that their responsibility is that no matter what your life is, no matter what your career is, no matter what your job is, what your family is, it's going to be what you make it because you're responsible for it.
That's good.
You're responsible. You can't blame the devil.
Yeah.
You can't blame anything. It's going to be it's going to be on you. So that's the first thing that I think manhood is about, is responsibility. Second thing I think manhood is compassion. And what I mean about that is being sensitive enough to understand that whatever you are responsible for, be it a family, and that could entail marriage, dating, courtship, children, extended family, whatever that is, that you have to be sensitive enough to know that they won't get what you get, because as a man, you're the visionary. So you've already been to the future at least 3 times.
Wow.
You have to walk them to that future. You have to take them by the hand and walk them to that future. And so that requires compassion to know that whenever I reach a spot when walking with you that makes me uncomfortable, of course you're certain because you know where we're going. I don't.
Yeah.
So I have to be sensitive and compassionate enough to say, all right, let me give you a moment without being insensitive or empathetic to what you're going through, to say, all right, we still gonna get there, but I'm gonna give you a moment till you get the strength to say, all right, I can take your hand again and keep on walking. Then I think that manhood requires two more things, and I'll let that go. Manhood, I believe, requires a great deal of trust. And what I mean is that, number one, you have to trust yourself.
Yeah.
So you've got to know who and what you are, no matter what that is. You have to trust. You have to trust yourself. And then at the same time, you have to be able, and that connects to compassion. I believe we have to be able to earn the trust of other people. And that means that every day I'm married to an amazing woman, and I do not doubt that she loves me at all.
Yeah.
But I do realize that every day I still have to earn her trust.
Wow.
And I'm one decision away
from losing,
from either breaking her trust or keeping to earn that trust.
Wow.
You understand?
Yeah.
Even with my children,
yeah,
I'm one decision away from maintaining the trust that we've gained or breaking that trust.
Wow.
So every day I have to really navigate that okay, if I make this decision, you know, and as my father would say, breaking somebody's trust is like breaking glass, and you still got to walk through it barefoot.
Wow.
You understand?
Yeah.
So I'm always cognizant of, whoo, all right, do I want to walk through the glass barefoot just to get to the person to whom, you know, just to reconcile or reconnect what it is? And it doesn't even have to be big as being unfaithful. It can be something as small as me not keeping my word when I said I was going to take care of a bill.
Yeah.
Or me not keeping my word when I said I'm going to get off work and go to the game.
Yeah.
It can be something that small.
Wow.
That trust can be shattered. So, yes, sir.
Wow. Man, that's good. So, responsibility, compassion, trust, and trusting yourself, and that piece of earning or being willing to earn other people's trust. And I think for the men that are married and those of us that desire to be married and those of us who are dating, we got to remember that, because sometimes you feel like, man, you should already trust me. Like, we go into, but the truth is, you have to be willing to embrace the idea that I got to earn their trust every day. And that's just romance. And we're one, I love that, man. We're one decision away from breaking trust. And then trust is not one decision putting it back together. Because if you ever break it or lose it, man, you catch the devil trying to get it back. And that's the same with our kids too. So for the men that are listening, hear that being a man is, yes, it's about responsibility. But don't get left at the responsibility, because there was a generation, Pastor Gibbs, that those brothers, they did the responsibility part. They brought the food home, they took care of the house, they paid the bills, they did all that, but they lacked that compassion, man, and they did not seek to earn trust every day. Some of them brothers had a house they took care of over here and a house they took care of over there, and that defined a man. So we don't want manhood to be just taking care of the responsibility. We want manhood to be some of those other things you mentioned too, the vulnerability, the friendship, thinking about life lessons and legacy lessons. We want that. We want manhood to be compassion. And that trust piece, man, just touches me differently, because I am one of them brothers that's like, listen, if I ain't did nothing, you ain't got no business not trusting me now. So it's a conscious decision every day to embrace the idea. I'm earning your trust to my daughter, to your kids. I'm earning the trust of even us as pastors, right? We're consistently earning the trust of those we serve. So, man, that's powerful. And with you defining manhood like that, with responsibility, with compassion, trust, when would you say you became a man?
Wow, that's a good question. And I'm going to be honest with you, Pastor. Every day I'm still becoming.
Wow.
I'm more mature today than I was yesterday and the day before that. But every day I'm still becoming. I think that the most dangerous place that any man could put themselves in is when they think that they've already arrived and became. Every day I'm still learning more about compassion, because and every day I'm still learning about vulnerability, because and the reason why I'm still becoming is because every 4 to 5 years, my wife's going to become a different person.
Yeah.
Now I've got to relearn that person, and then I've got to learn how to be vulnerable to that person, because the person who she becomes 4 or 5 years from now may require a deeper level of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I've got to be able to say, okay, then it's going to require me to dig a little deeper than what the other person did. And then my relationship is going to suffer, and I could break her trust if I say, how come I can't have the person you change it? How come I can't have that person?
Yeah.
You know, that first person ain't want all of this. They need all of this.
Wow.
You understand? Or even with my kids, you know. It's easy when they 3 and they 1, but what happens when they start developing life and they may want to do Pee Wee League ball. And I'm like, I was a pastor when you met me. Wow. You understand? I was preaching. Now I've got to, now, you know, I was working, yada, yada. Now I've got to, okay, I've got to continue to earn their trust that at the end of the day, because if not, they'll love God, their father who represents him.
Ooh. You understand? Say that to us again. They'll love God.
God, but hate their father who represents him.
Good.
So then I'll have to show them another form of how Christ looks, that if God was their biological father, and we know he's their heavenly father, how would he father them? Yeah. So that means that just like God makes a way for us, I would have to make a way for them and be like, oh no, I'm going to be at that game and I'm going to stay through the whole game. You understand?
Wow.
You know, and that's one of the things I think, honestly, I didn't score 100 on that. Mm-hmm. With my older kids. I was young. I'm trying to do ministry, trying to do work and this and that. And so a lot of games I did make it to, but by halftime, I had to go do a Bible study. I had to go catch a plane or a bus. And one of the hardest things to listen to my son tell me was when I was there, he was like, Daddy, if you weren't there for my win, you wasn't there. If you weren't there when I lost, you wasn't there.
Wow.
You understand. And at the end of the day, you know, yeah, the church got you.
Yeah.
But I lost my father in the process. So I didn't realize that I was still stuck on that. So now I had to learn that I have to be compassionate that their needs are going to change. And when your needs change, your trust might be that much more fragile. So now I have to make sure that I reinforce that as you change and grow and evolve, I have to continue to reinforce your trust that I'm going to grow and navigate with you.
So, man, good grief, man. And so I really try to, because we're in pastor mode all the time, when I come to the podcast, I try to pull back from it. But what's in you, just in you. So you know what I'm saying? You can't really suppress what's in us. So the conversation spin sometimes, man. And when you mention that, it's been so convicting to me with my daughter, because there's been times where she calls and I give her short conversations because somebody from the church is calling. And it's the same thing. Like your son said, if you weren't there when the buzzer went off at zeros, you weren't there. And I had my daughter really convicted me. It was through her mom, but she told her mom, he gets off the phone so fast. And I was like, well, at least I'm calling. But they need more than that sometimes, man. So to hear you say, and that's the first time, honestly, that someone has said they're still becoming a man every day. And I think that might be the most accurate response, at least one of the most accurate responses to what it means to actually be a man and tell or date when I became a man, is the fact that I'm still becoming a man every single day. And that whole piece, man, where your wife changes every 4 years and you're going to shift and have to change every 4 years, is so powerful. And it may not even be 4 years. It may be every 4 weeks that you got to shift, man. So that's so good. And I hope the brothers that are listening, I hope y'all are hearing that. We can't be afraid of the people in our lives having shifts. We got to be okay with the fact spouse, children, bosses, you know what I mean?
Yes.
People going to shift. And a part of becoming, continually becoming a man, is adjusting to the shifts. We've been called in that leadership regard. So a couple more questions, man, and I'm going to get out your hair. But highs and lows, right? So you said, like you said, you're becoming a man. So what would you say were or are some highs of manhood? And then be vulnerable with us and let us know what some lows of manhood have been.
Well, some of the highs for me in manhood have been being able to be successful, graduating school, graduating college and getting degrees, being able to have a decent family that some people would look at and some people would say, and I put this in quotation, air quotes, goals, right?
Yeah.
That from the outside looking in, people look at, say, oh yeah, I want that, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Being able to be at a place for me, a high where I'm comfortable in my own skin. That's a manhood for me. Just, you know, some of the successes that I've made in the corporate world, because I'm bivocational, and some of the things that I've made, a lot of the targets that I've had, I've been fortunately to aim toward the bullseye and accomplish those.
Wow.
So those are a lot of the highs. The lows that I've had honestly have been having, because I'm more known for ministry, having quote unquote the goals, and then at the same time having to navigate various opposing opinions to various decisions that you make,
right?
And then feeling the depression. And if feeling the depression that comes with that, and then you have to sit, in that sometimes everybody's not gonna like the decisions that you make.
Wow.
Everybody's not gonna agree with the decisions that you make. And then losing a lot of close relationships because your life takes an unexpected turn. And for me, one of the things my father taught my brothers and I is you lose life if you say stuck where a place ended.
Wow.
You got to be able to have a hard cry and move on.
Wow.
Because as a leader, if you stay stuck, you can't grieve or whine and cry about something, whether that's the lights getting, okay, the lights is off. You didn't expect it.
Yeah.
What's the plan to get them back on?
Wow.
You got to move on. You know what I'm saying? Because if not, if you stay stuck, your family's still in the dark. You understand? So how do you move on? How you navigate that? Okay, I got it. You was running with the ball. You wasn't paying attention. You let the outside noise get in your way. You fumble.
Yeah.
Okay, you fumble. You still can't recover.
Right.
You understand? You can't stay on the ground when the end zone is ahead of you. And so, but a lot of people don't understand that. And once you make a decision, and a lot of times as a man, one of the lows that I've had, and I appreciate the lows, because sometimes the greatest lessons are in the lows.
Wow.
And so I've had those lows. I've had those lows where, unfortunately, and I know you can relate to this, having to live your life out loud in public, having to publicly walk through reconciling with my older kids because of a whole lot of things that was going on. That was an extreme low for me. And then having to navigate everybody's opinion about that, you understand? Yeah. And even deal through that, because you're already dealing with the fact that life as you knew it with your children has just made it a complete about face.
Yeah.
And then you have to sit in and figure out, okay, how does that get restored? And unfortunately, you can't do that privately.
Right.
You have to kind of do that publicly.
Jeez.
And then at the same time be able to bounce back and rebuild and still deal with the highs and the lows of reconciliation and coming back together while you're trying to have a new marriage, build a new family, and raise different children.
Jesus,
and
man.
Hope that this new woman in your life trusts despite everything that's going on.
Jesus.
Yes, sir.
Wow. So real quick, man, just to spin on this. I heard you mention a word that's a very, very triggering word in today's society for sure, was depression. And I know we've had some personal conversations and private conversations about what you went through, which is not the platform to share everything you went through. But we've mentioned this part already, having nursed a wife through transition and dealing with the heavy grief of that on top of having to live out loud. I like that term, having to live out loud in the public eye. What are some things you could share with men who are battling with this silent depression or who's just battling with depression, period, that maybe is from grief? Because we don't talk about grief enough, especially in Black men's communities. We don't talk about grief enough and the result of grief turning into what now has become a popular term called depression. What is some advice or what are some things you could share with men who are dealing with depression of how you navigated through it? Or what are some things you could share with them that maybe they can identify that it's depression and not just a sad day?
Well, depression is as my therapist shared with me, because I didn't even know I had it. She said I was a high functioning depressive.
Wow.
And so I didn't even really know I had it. I just knew something was off.
Yeah.
And just listening to the journey of my wife said to me, she said, "Listen, we gonna go get some counseling.
Wow.
We gonna go talk to somebody." Because I got to a place to where there were a lot of things that what I would normally want to do, I did not want to do it. I did not want to do it. It was a chore to want to eat. It was a chore to want to just take a shower, get up, wash my face. I just wanted to just lay there because I really felt this strong sense of defeat. But I didn't realize it was just depression, because what happens is sometimes depression hit us when we're not ready to acknowledge or accept the reality that what once was is no longer.
Wow.
And so we internalize that defeat, because we're not ready to move forward with that. Okay, transition has come, and it doesn't matter what that transition can be. I've heard of men having depression because their whole life they had to work for their children, but now their last child is gone and they're empty nester. And what am I working for now? Yeah. And they never tried to get a hobby or have vacations. So now it's like, what do I do? Where's my sense of purpose?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to be doing now? So one thing I would encourage men as I've been encouraged, never lose your sense of purpose. What are you here for? And even though things happen, people grow, people evolve, and that sort of thing like that, you don't stop being significant, and you don't lose a sense of purpose.
Wow.
Simply because and for me, I don't know, I think when life started looking different for me, I didn't realize that I lost some sense of purpose and some sense of focus. So I struggled through it.
Yeah.
I really struggled through it. And so I would encourage every man that if you feel that, have a network of friends that you can talk to. And that was one thing that I lacked in my life. I was so used to preaching to everybody that I never really got a chance to make friends with anybody.
Wow.
So I didn't have an outlet. I did that to myself.
Yeah.
I didn't have an outlet because I felt like spirituality and ministry was going to be enough.
Wow.
You understand? And so I learned the hard way that everybody needs an outlet and somebody that they can talk to besides, including Jesus.
That's good, man. Listen, that's definitely so many things you said today are just profound. But in dealing with that depression piece, one of the things that really stood out is having, I wrote, a partner. Having a partner,
because
you said, as your wife said, babe, some ain't right. We're going to go find out.
Right.
You need a partner, whether that's romantic partner, platonic partner, whatever that looks like. And you talk about having an outlet of friends and people to talk to. And it's hard being in ministry. It's hard being a pastor. You don't want to become too common with the people. You don't, you know, so many reasons why to be standoffish. But the truth is we need community. And that's one of the things I can appreciate about our relationship. That I know,
yes,
if it comes down to it and I don't have another outlet, I can give you a call and I know the information is going to stay right there, and vice versa. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that, man. And I appreciate the love and just, man, what you mean to the kingdom and what you mean right now to men and what this conversation means for men. And I want to close with this. Just shoot us a couple mentors that you have that exemplify manhood to you, whether they're still here or whether they've transitioned. Who are some mentors in your life that exemplify manhood?
All right. Well, I would start off, he's been deceased this year, made 18 years. Mm-hmm. I would start off definitely with my dad.
Nice.
With my dad. He is definitely, for me, even to this day, I could relate to you saying that your dad is your friend, even though he's no longer here.
Wow.
My dad is still my buddy, my guy, and he mentors me even from the grave, or as our fathers are in that great cloud of witnesses.
Yeah.
What he instilled in me, the words, I can still hear them. You know, I can still hear them. And so just his example of having to just be strong, and his vulnerability on his dying bed to look at me and still love me enough to be like, hey, look, don't end up like this.
Yeah.
This is not how you want to end
up.
This is not living, you know. Don't waste your life like that, so I can appreciate that. Secondly, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on your platform, but I mean this sincerely, because God used you to come into my life in a very intricate time. You definitely are more than just my pastor and a brother friend. You're definitely a mentor.
I appreciate
for me.
Wow.
And what I mean by that is every day, like our conversation yesterday, as far as leadership, always willing to stretch.
Yeah.
Always willing to stretch me and say, no, you're more elastic than that. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
And just really stretching me and creating infrastructure and just helping me to see things all the time from a different way, whether in person or from afar. I can see that you really modeled that, how to handle, because, you know, most people feel like when you're charismatic, you don't really have to do a whole lot of work because everything comes. But you not taking advantage of your charisma, because you're very charismatic, very gifted,
wow,
and very anointed, very influential. But you really taking serious your assignment, being responsible that, no, if this fails, I fail.
Yeah.
I never heard anybody communicate that to me other than my daddy.
Wow.
That, no, if this fails, I fail.
Yeah.
You know, I can't blame that on the devil. I fail. So I always keep that in my mindset and apply that mantra to every aspect of my life. Another mentor of mine definitely would be my godfather Joseph Clark.
Okay.
He's a preacher as well. He's getting a little older, but I always try to model he's extremely compassionate and loving.
Okay.
He's extremely compassionate and loving, and so his mindset has always been, you have to serve sheep and goats. And you have to treat both of them the same.
Wow.
You have to treat both of them the same. And so I've learned he has a huge heart. He's extremely loving and forgiving. And he's one of those people, if I call him because I'm having a hard time, like X, Y, and Z, the first thing he's going to say, do you have the love of God in your heart? Yes, sir. Then it ought to be easy to
forgive. Wow.
He's taught me that just because you're having to nurse the pain doesn't mean that you didn't forgive.
Ooh,
you know,
yeah,
that sometimes you
That's
have
good.
To learn how to deal with the pain, because the pain is personal, but still forgive them so that your heart can be pure, so that you can give them the service that they need.
That's
because goats will butt you. And uniquely, he had a farm with a lot of goats. And you could see how they were butt heads with each other. He said, sometimes they butt heads with you.
Wow.
he said, but what I realized, if I don't feed them, they die. And it's my fault. They still need me, although they don't realize
it. Good God.
So yeah. So those people, I would really say, hands on, my dad, my godfather, yourself,
yeah,
would be the three that come to my mind. Oh yeah, and one more. My other godfather, he's deceased. Alfonso Wilcox.
Okay.
He definitely he made me think. He said the most insulting person is a person who can't think.
Wow.
And if you love people, you think.
Yeah.
If you love people, you think, and be open to rethinking. And this man had several degrees. He had probably as many degrees as a thermometer. He was always open. Even he died, and I want to say like 89.
Yeah.
And he was still serving a church full of nothing but young people.
Wow.
At 89.
Wow.
Because he was never afraid to rethink.
Yeah.
And to be relevant and stuff like that. So
that's good.
All of that kind of makes me PG Leonard Gibbs, who
yes,
he
sir.
Is. All of you gentlemen together helps to make me have helped to make me who I am. Yes, sir.
Well, man, I'm truly honored to be in that number of people, man, and I appreciate that. It's very rare to actually hear somebody explain to you why you're their mentor in today's time. A lot of people just think you cool and they say you dress nice, so I want to dress like that. You my mentor. But man, I appreciate that, and I'm honored to be a part of that. And listen, man, we're so honored to have you on this platform. I don't take it lightly. Don't take it for granted. Man, you've been phenomenal. And to all of our listeners, thank y'all so much for being with us today. Enjoy the rest of this Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your day. And remember, no matter what happens today, it's always, always a great day to be great. I love y'all so much. Thank y'all for supporting the podcast. Make sure you go and rate the podcast. Share it with somebody. Share it with your uncle. Share it with your brother. Share it with your husband. Share it with the dude at your job. Make sure you get a man to hear this podcast. We love you and we're out. Peace. It's a great morning.